Good morning. I want to welcome with us for this oral argument the Pre-Law Society. Would members of the Pre-Law Society please stand? They're welcome. Oh, good. Good. And what are you connected? What institution are you connected with? Good. Thank you. And we have students from the Albany High School. Would they stand, please? We want to welcome all of you, too. You may be seated. We have a program called Court with Class, which is sponsored by the State Bar and the Supreme Court of Wisconsin. Students from high schools across the state are invited to come here, join us in an oral argument, and then meet with a justice at noon, and a discussion is held about the procedures of the court, not the substance of the cases that the students have heard. And the students have received materials on the cases and have done a variety of work on the cases when they come here. Have the pre-law society students gotten material on this case? The answer is either yes or no. Well, there's a summary of the case, if you want it, outside on the desk. It may help you to understand the case if you read the summary for a few moments. If you wish to get a summary, you may leave and get it. Let me introduce the justices to you all. I'm going to start on my far left. And that's Justice Justice Patience Robensack. You didn't change your name since this morning. And seated next to her is Justice David Prosser. And Justice Prosser is the justice with whom you will meet at noon. To my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my right is Justice John Wilcox, and to his right is Justice Patrick Brooks, and on the far right is Justice Diane Sykes. With those introductions made, I'll call the second case, which is 02-0542, Patricia H. Roth versus Lafarge School District Board of Canvassers, and Gail J. Muller. Representing Patricia Roth is Christopher J. Blythe. Mr. Blythe.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Christopher Blythe. I'm an attorney with Lawton & Cates, and I represent the petitioner, Patricia Roth, who is also here in the courtroom today. This case, which began nearly 3 years ago, centers on a dispute regarding a single contested ballot in a school referendum in the village, in the school district of Lafarge. Now, here, unlike other more high-profile recounts that began that same day, we don't have any suggestion of voter fraud and malfunctioning machines. There's no butterfly ballots. There's no hanging chads. We simply have a question as to whether the decision of a local board of canvassers, that decision to not count a ballot that they deemed unanimously, quote, looks erased, whether that decision should be reversed. I think the fundamental issue comes down to who we want to make decisions regarding ballots. The legislature, in section 9.01 sub 8 of the statutes for these type of proceedings, has vested the fact-finding power in the local board of canvassers. Fact recognized by the circuit court in this case and by the Court of Appeals in their first decision on this case. What we have here is a single ballot with an extremely light mark. There's no indication from the record that any other ballots had the same or even similar appearance. The three-member board of canvassers all looked at the ballot, and they unanimously determined that the ballot looks erased. They therefore reasoned the voter's intent could not be determined and did not count the ballot.
When you talk about an erasure, what's the other criteria? There's one more. You talk about an erasure and what happens to the other. There are two possibilities. There's an erasure, and then is there a mark in the other column?
In the other column on the ballot?
That's correct.
No, there's not.
So what does the statute say then? If there is a mark, then what, or if there isn't a mark?
Well, the statute says in section 7.50 sub 2, sub C, that if there's a mark indicating an intent to vote for that candidate, in this case it's a referendum, but it means the same thing. If there's a mark indicating an intent to vote, then you count it. Okay? So here, the Board of Canvassers deemed that what the voter had apparently attempted to erase the mark. And in applying what's the voter's intent, that was their factual determination as to what the voter's intent was, to erase the mark. Now, the Circuit Court initially refused to, on timeliness grounds, initially refused to hear arguments on this. The case was appealed to the Court of Appeals the first time, and the Court of Appeals says, well, no, you should have given them their day in court and sent it back and ordered the Circuit Court to have a hearing on that disputed ballot. And in their remand, the Court of Appeals, and this is the first time it went to the Court of Appeals, stated, it laid out the standard of review for the Circuit Court to use, and it referenced the statute. It said, the Board determined that the intent of the voter could not be determined and therefore excluded the vote. Because the Board is a trier of fact, its findings must be upheld if they are supported by substantial evidence. And that's a standard laid out in Section 9.01, sub 8 of the statutes. And the Court also cited to the case DeBrew versus Board of Canvassers for the City of Appleton, 206, with Second 321. The Court also went on to say, we must therefore remand this case to the trial court for a determination regarding the intent of the voter of the excluded no vote. Now, the trial court did exactly as it was instructed by the Court of Appeals. It held a hearing, it considered the evidence, and utilizing the substantial evidence test, it upheld the finding of the Board of Canvassers. It said that fact-finding by the Board of Canvassers was supported by substantial evidence, and it upheld the Board of Canvassers' finding. Now, the case was again appealed to the Court of Appeals, and on the second go-around, the Court of Appeals overturned the Circuit Court and said, in direct contradiction of its first ruling on this, that essentially said that as a matter of law, you've got to count the ballot. There's no subjective determination to be made. And what they did was, I think, come up with a wrong and unsupported interpretation of the relevant section of the statute, section 7.50 sub 2 sub C. That statute states if an elector marks a ballot with a cross or any other marks, and then it lists a bunch of other possible types of marks, if an elector marks a ballot within the square to the right of a candidate's name or any place within the space in which the name appears, indicating an intent to vote for that candidate, it's a vote for that candidate whose name appears opposite. Now, the trial court, I think, correctly, and the Court of Appeals in the first go-round, essentially noted that the statute imposes a two-step test. First, is there a mark? And second, is that mark indicate an intent of the voter to cast a vote? But on the second go-around, as I stated, the Court of Appeals said, well, there's no subjective intent to be made. If there's any kind of a mark, then you count the ballot. Now, I think that's not only contradicted by the plain language of the statute. The statute itself has the phrase indicating an intent to vote for that candidate. If you accept the Court of Appeals interpretation, that's superfluous language.
Counselor, couldn't it also be that the indicating an intent to vote for the candidate just explains that any of these marks are sufficient?
Well, I think that makes it superfluous language. I think if that's the result you wanted to have, you could just say if an elector marks a ballot with a mark, it is a vote for that candidate. They could have said it that way.
That's true, but this is a subsection, and the subsections all deal with how you determine intent. So mm-hmm. they're all focused on what you're supposed mm-hmm. to do. And I guess what bothers me the most is subsection CM is the only subsection that's at issue here that deals with an erasure. And mm-hmm. it was my understanding that the Board of Canvassers thought that the mark that was made was a mark, but that it was erased. Mm-hmm. Well, if we're going to talk about erasures and we're going to look at their opinion and we're under CM, then you have more than just an erasure at issue. You have something else the elector has to do And that's what I have some concern about. I think that goes to Justice Wilcox's question early on. Isn't there something else that's required if we're going to rely on an erasure to show a lack of intent?
Well, I think subsection CM doesn't deal with this case. It deals with a different case where it says if there's a mark for one candidate, for example, and apparent erasure for another, in that case, it directs the Board of Canvassers, no, you don't count that in that case. That's not the case with this ballot.
Right.
And I think to impose that, what I guess you'd call in math terms a contrapositive that says an apparent erasure must be counted in all other cases doesn't make sense.
Well, this was the only thing on the ballot, and the person whose ballot it was filed it. Now, if they didn't want to vote, why didn't they just tear it up? Why file something with a mark in one place if they erased it, as the canvassers thought, showing no intent to vote? Why vote? There's nothing else on the ballot.
I don't know what that voter's thought was. I do know that, you know, in every election you do get some blank ballots back. People may go and say, you know, geez, I don't like either of these people, and they put in a blank ballot. We don't know what was in that voter's mind.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact finder as to the intent of that voter is the Board of Canvassers under the statute.
Let me ask
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Let's talk about 752C. If an elector marks a ballot with a cross X or any other mark such as A, V, O, slash, check, or plus, within the square to the right of the candidate's name or any place within the space in which the name appears, indicating an intent to vote for that candidate, it is a vote for the candidate whose name it is opposite. Now, it seems to me that what you're saying is that even if there is a mark there, that that it's up to the Board of Canvassers to decide whether or not the voter intended to vote. In other words, so it seems to me it would be a stretch that if there is a mark, then there has to be an independent indication of intent. Now, why would the legislature grant for every ballot this board is looking at, they're going to look, well, there's a mark, but what was the intent of that voter? Well, the mark speaks for itself. And I don't think that the Board of Canvassers should have the rather awesome power in every election to decide what the voter's intent was, because the voter could put in a slash. It doesn't say it has to be an X. In fact, when you look at the ballot, which is in the record here, it has a very clear slash across it. I mean, it's there. And it looks like there was a partial other, whatever it was. But and there's nothing in the other box. Mm-hmm. That's blank. So if you just read the statute, it would seem to me that if there's something in a box, then that would be counted.
Well, I guess.
What's wrong with that? What are you saying that in every that the Board of Canvassers go through, and if there isn't a mark, obviously, then you can't count that ballot. But if there is a mark, and it talks about all different types of marks, then that should be counted, and that's it. So there's a mark.
Well, but
are you debating whether there's a mark or not?
Well, what the Board of Canvassers found was there's a mark that the voter attempted to erase. So, I mean, there is still something visible there. I don't disagree there's something visible there.
Is it a light mark? Was it a dark mark? Is there a difference? The statute doesn't say that. It says that if it marks, and it can be a line, an A, a V, an O, a slash, a check, a plus, within the square to the right. So I think we're putting quite a burden on the Board of Canvassers to talk about not only is there a mark, but whether the mark was erased.
Well, I guess to respond to that, I guess I don't think we're putting burden. I don't think it's this owner's. I mean, it was only an issue with regard to one ballot. And if you look back over to case law, I mean, the only other case that I found that reached Supreme Court on an issue like this was 41 years ago. So we have two cases in 41 years. where there's an issue as the subjective intent of the voter. And I think I think if you're going to interpret a statute the way the Court of Appeals did the second time around, you've got to override this Court's own decision in the Schmidt case, Schmidt versus City of West Bend Board of Canvassers, 18 West 2nd, 316 from 1962. In that case, a voter put an X in the box, and then they, like, scratched over it. Okay? They attempted to remove that vote. And the Supreme Court of this state upheld the finding that clearly the intent of that elector was to remove that vote. Now, that's identically the same thing here, except for the way they attempted to remove their vote. There you had a fact finding that they attempted to remove their vote by scratching it out. Here you had a fact finding that they attempted to remove their vote by erasing it.
Well, let's talk about that, because then you drop down to CM. It says, mm-hmm. any apparent erasure of a mark next to the name of the candidate mm-hmm. may not be counted as a vote for that candidate if the elector makes another mark mm-hmm. next to the name of one or more of the candidates for the same office. Well, that isn't the case here. This is a referendum. Mm-hmm. Well, the ballot has no other mark, so mm-hmm. why are we talking about an erasure when there's no other mark?
I guess sub CM refers to a different situation. It doesn't apply to this situation because you don't have that circumstance here where you have an erasure by one and a mark by the other. What that section specifically speaks to is that specific occurrence, and we don't have that.
So you're contending that the board has the power to determine whether or not the mark is light or dark, or whether there was an erasure. Because we don't, when you look at this, there's not only, there's kind of another line, and then there's kind of a hole in the paper.
Well, like I said, I mean, a lot of people could look at it and come up with a different interpretation of what voters intent was.
I don't want to argue, and right. I don't intend to. I'm just asking, is there a mark in one of the boxes?
I guess my response to that is you can see something visible there. I would agree. The Board of Canvassers determined that that was an apparent erasure of the mark that was there. That's how the Board of Canvassers, that was their finding.
If there was an erasure, then that would be, and I agree with that, if there is an erasure, and then that would not be counted if the elector makes another mark next to the name in the box, in the other box. There's two boxes here. One box has a mark in it. There isn't a mark in the other box.
Right, and I guess, as I said, that refers to a different situation. That doesn't say if there's an apparent erasure and no other mark, you must always count an apparent erasure. That doesn't make sense to say if your determination is that they were trying to erase it, you've got to count it. That doesn't conform to 5.01 of the statutes, which says give effect to the will of the electors. And if you look at that and say, oh, they were trying to erase it, but they didn't make another mark, too bad, we're counting that vote, even though they intended to erase it.
If they tried to erase it, then they would they have used, if there was, under this, there's no mark in either one, let's mm-hmm. accept that, mm-hmm. then the voter still put that ballot in the ballot box. Mm-hmm. They had another choice. Did they have to put the ballot in the ballot box?
They didn't have to, no.
Okay. All right.
No. But like I said, I mean, every election I don't want to step too far outside the record.
I understand.
But
I just wanted to.
I've been involved in a lot of recounts, and you see blank ballots.
Sure. I understand.
Mr. Blythe, maybe you could clarify something for me that I'm not certain about. I know you're critical of the Court of Appeals and the approach they took in the second mm-hmm. Roth case, if you will. Mm-hmm. Did they have the ballot, had the ballot come up to them when they were looking at the first Roth case?
The first time?
Right.
No. And I guess part of my problem with the second, it seems to me what they essentially did is they engaged in their own fact-finding on the second go-round. That they looked at the ballot and apparently thought, well, maybe they should have counted. I mean, just from a review of the ballot.
Well, isn't it significant that they had available to them that exhibit, no ballot, if you will, when they were deciding whether or not 750 2CM was applicable as well as 7.52C?
Well, actually, I don't think so, because I think what the Court of Appeals' job was to interpret the law and not to look at the ballot and decide whether they thought it reflected voter intent or not. That's a fact-finding job that the legislature and the statute gave to the Board of Canvassers.
So you think they overstepped their bounds in finding facts?
I do, and I think the circuit court, in addition to the Board of Canvassers, the circuit court looked at the ballot and said, well, You could come up with a number of explanations for what this is, but one plausible explanation is that the voter intended to erase it. And the statute says, under the substantial evidence test, which doesn't mean, you know, greater weight, but if a reasonable person could arrive at that conclusion, which the circuit court did and which the Board of Canvassers did, that you have to defer to the fact-finding of the Board of Canvassers.
Well, it's clear that if this is a fact, that there's a deference and there's the substantial mm-hmm. evidence rule. Mm-hmm. But the issue can very well be, was a correct legal principle, rule mm-hmm. of law, applied? Mm-hmm. And on that, it would be a de novo kind of review. It would be for example, they could say, here's how you interpret the statute, 2B, 2C, CM, etc. And if that's what the Court of Appeals is doing, it can do that, regardless of what the Board of Canvassers did. You disagree?
No, but I agree, but not in this case. They didn't have the authority to do that because of the law of the case.
I understand that. So, I've read this opinion a number of times, and I'm trying to decide what is the rule of law upon which it is based, or what is the rule of law that it announces. And the only thing I could come up with is the last paragraph on 12. We conclude that the Board of Canvassers and the trial court erroneously interpreted 2C by not concluding that the mark on the disputed ballot indicated an intent to vote no. And if you read the prior paragraphs, it would seem to me that what the Court of Appeals is saying, that where there is a mark on the ballot, even if it's faint, even if it looks like it's been erased, but it's the only thing on the ballot, some mark. And we agree there's some line there, right? You have to agree to that.
Yes.
Okay. If there is a line, if there's a line, you're probably in the box, and this was in, even if it's faint, even if it might have been erased, as a matter of law, that is a ballot that must be counted. Because as a matter of law, the intent was to vote in that manner, and that's what the legislature wants to do, validate ballots. If that's a rule of law about which, and if you accept that, then the Board of Canvassers' intent, or the Board of Canvassers' view of the intent, is irrelevant, because intent has become a matter of law, a matter of interpretation of the statutes, and the Board of Canvassers is irrelevant because the Court of Appeals has set that rule.
I agree that with your analysis, that the only way you get to that conclusion is to say, as a matter of law, 7.50 sub C sub 2 requires any mark be counted, and that you don't really try to make a factual determination of an intent. Now, to get there, again, though, my criticism of that, that makes that section in that the line in that section superfluous. And second, you've got to override the Schmidt case, because in the Schmidt case, there was a mark. And the only difference between this and the Schmidt case is the method by which they tried to remove the mark.
Well,
in the Schmidt case, they did a subjective finding as to intent.
In the Schmidt case, let's just say there were two boxes. Mm-hmm. Both of them had marks. One had what appeared to be an obliterated mark, and the other one had what appeared to be a clean mark. Mm-hmm. And under the statute, first of all, the statutes were different then, and the standard of review was different, if I understand this. But it would seem that it's quite clear on the ballot that a mistake was made, and that the most clear mark is the one that the voter intended. In this case, there's only one mark on this ballot. Mm-hmm. Faint, maybe erased, but one mark. Unlike Schmidt. And Schmidt would probably come under 2CM now.
Well, but there's no erasure in the Schmidt case. And 2CM only speaks to erasure.
Well, erasure doesn't necessarily have to mean a pencil erasure. It can mean a total striking out. I mean, you could read erasure to mean obliterate. I didn't use the word erasure. I used obliterate. So is it your position that this rule of law, if that's what this Court of Appeals is saying, is wrong? And the rule of law is that the Board of Canvassers has to examine each ballot, if that's in question, and decide what the voter might have intended. And if they can't decide, then they just eliminate the ballot. Is that the rule of law you want to come out of this case?
Yeah, I think the rule of law is that the legislature has given the Board of Canvassers the responsibility in the case, when it's a questionable case, to make a subjective determination as to the intent of the voter. Because the 5.01 says determine the will of the electorate. And if the Board of Canvassers says, we think they were trying to erase their vote. That's the will of the electorate. And that's what 5.01 commands the Board of Canvassers and the statutes to be interpreted with an eye towards that. Not to count a ballot where a person apparently wanted to not cast a ballot.
If you don't know, it's out. If the Board of Canvassers can't decide.
Well, the Board of Canvassers decided here that it looks like it was erased. That was their decision.
They didn't say it may be, it may not be.
They said it looks erased.
Didn't they at some time decide they couldn't decide what the voter's intent was?
They said we can't determine that the voter's intent essentially was to cast a vote.
Vote or not vote, therefore this vote is not going to be counted.
Yeah, because the statute requires that it has to be a mark that indicates an intent to cast a vote. You could have a flaw in the paper and you get, in the copying process where you get a mark there, and if you apply a literal interpretation statute, if there's a mark there, we don't know if that's a flaw in the paper, the person just did a little dot with their pencil or whatever. I don't have the concern in going through the case law that there's going to be this plethora of case out there of Board of Canvassers abusing this discretion and tossing out all kinds of ballots because, we don't like the way they made that mark. I mean, like I say, there's only two cases in 41 years.
So. My concern is that I don't, and I want you to answer it, I'm not sure about that legislative intent to grant this power that the Board of Canvassers in this case, the facts that I set out or the chief set out would allow them to use and say, well, the intent here was to do the following and then toss a ballot that has a mark on it. You're saying they clearly have that power, and that's under...
I'm saying if it's questionable, they have the responsibility under the statutes to decide the intent of the voter, consistent with 5.01 of the statute, which says give effect to the will of the electorate. And if the Board of Canvassers determines that the will of that elector was to erase the ballot, we shouldn't count the ballot. If we think they intended to erase their vote, I don't think we want a rule of law that says, well, we're going to count their vote regardless of what we think their intent was.
How do you handle this? The scope of review is set forth in whatever section is
9.01 sub 8.
That's right. And if there is substantial evidence to support the determination of the Board of Canvassers, we're supposed to give deference to the Board of Canvassers. And, in fact, I think and you can define substantial evidence as something more than a scintilla, which is a pretty low bar and means a lot of deference.
Right.
But if you look at that ballot, it looks like it's a mark that, in my mind, indicates that's what the voter wanted. I mean, it's one of the accepted marks under the statute is this diagonal. That's what it is. There's no obvious erasure mark in my mind. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem in this case. The tension between the rule substantial evidence and what I see with my eyes. And can what I see with my eyes trump the finding of the Board of Canvassers? And I can therefore conclude there's no, it's just that low bar of a little, you know, more than a scintilla has not been reached in this case because of what I see with my eyes. That's the problem. How do you address it?
Well, I guess, with all due respect, if you were on the Board of Canvassers, that may very well have been your finding. But we had three of them who unanimously arrived at a different conclusion, and they are the fact finders. And their finding of fact was that it looked erased. And, I mean, that's what the statute says, that they are the fact finders, and that, I mean, I guess if you can say that the three of them, that there's no evidence to support that conclusion at all, I mean, that's obviously this Court's prerogative. But I think that the Circuit Court, in looking at it, said that's one explanation. It's not the only one, but that's one plausible explanation. And I guess, like I say, I just go back to legislature made them the fact finders. I don't think you want, obviously, a lot of, you know, people bringing every contested ballot to this Court to decide. I think they put some subjective analysis power in the hands of the local Board of Canvassers to avoid that kind of situation. That, you know, and if it, well, I guess that's my answer.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You will have time for rebuttal. We are now going to hear from George C. Wilbur, attorney representing Gail J. Muller.
May it please the Court. Good morning. As indicated, I am George C. Wilbur. I am the attorney for Gail J. Muller, the third-party petitioner appellant in this matter. Ms. Muller intervened in this case, particularly on this question of this no ballot. This ballot with a no vote, was cast the night in November of 2000 on the school referendum case. It was counted by the Village of Lafarge poll workers as a vote, and in the recount, it was set aside because the, as it says in the minutes of the Board of Canvassers, they could not determine the intent. We ask that you uphold the Court of Appeals' interpretation of 7.502C, Wisconsin statutes, which provides a bright line rule that a mark which is an X or any other mark similar to those enumerated in the statutes made within the square to the right of the candidate's name indicates an intent to vote for that candidate and shall be counted. This decision follows a long line of cases of over 100 years in this Court and the statutory mandate to construe the statutes to give effect to the will of the voters. The voter in this case, has been pointed out, did everything right. They took a ballot, they made a mark, they placed it in the square, in this case not next to a candidate's name, but to the right of the word no. They submitted that ballot to the poll workers and cast their vote.
So as a matter of law, counsel, there is no such thing as an ambiguous mark?
Well, I think the Court of Appeals decision addressed that. They said it has to be a mark that's similar to one that's enumerated in Section 7.502C. That is, it could be an X, it could be a slash, either of which could, we could interpret this particular ballot to be. It could be an A, a C, some similar mark like that. If someone wrote a derogatory word on the ballot, would we count that as a vote? No. There we would perhaps have to come up with a decision as to intent. But as long as it's within the directive, the legislative directive, these are the types of things, and if they're in that box, you shall count them, then I think that's the rule of law in this case. Yes, the legislature is given a directive. They didn't leave this to the discretion. And to act otherwise, to not count a ballot with a mark in the box to the right of the candidate's name or the word no, was arbitrary and capricious in this matter. They overstepped their authority. The Board of Canvassers are, after all, political bodies. They're appointed by the clerk, in this case the clerk of the school board. The clerk couldn't be there. She appointed the president of the school board. This is the same group, the board, school board, that proposed this referendum. And they appointed the two employees of the school district. Now, I don't say that to imply that these people were dishonest in any way. In fact, One of them is was my formerly administrative assistant when I was Vernon County District Attorney, who I hold her in high esteem. But I do say that to point out that these boards of canvassers, one, they're not even poll workers. They're people who come out of the political spectrum and make a decision about these. And if we give boards of canvassers the authority to merely to look at a properly cast ballot and say something like, it looks erased, and thus void that ballot on that simple statement, we invite mischief or worse in the election process. The Court of Appeals decision is a short, easily understood directive to how to carry out the counting of the ballots.
How can you reconcile it with the first Court of Appeals decision?
Well, I don't think the first Court of Appeals decision did actually make any decision on this matter. First of all, it was three paragraphs in a, I think it was a 19-page decision. It was, they pointed out that the no ballot was not before them at that time. They did not have it in the record. There had been no hearings on the question. All they had was the arguments of counsel in their briefs. They did indicate that they thought my argument that 7.502CM, I argued that that resolved the matter, that there's no other vote there, and that you can't just call an erasure and then have no other vote, that would resolve it without further hearing. They rejected that. They said, well, we don't quite agree with that. And then they cited the statute that we should look at, the one we're here today on, 7.502C, the one in which they eventually interpreted. They did cite a case, and they made the statement that if this is a finding of fact, and as to the intent of the voter, then you've got to uphold the Board of Canvassers. Now, I think it was unfortunate that in also then add what we certainly understand is that if it's a question of law, however, then the court will look at it de novo. They didn't say that, but after all, we're all attorneys. We understand that's always the case. If it's a question of law, it's always a de novo decision. And that was perhaps missing, but these were offhanded, almost dicta remarks. Certainly not a ruling on the no. They've said, we don't have enough here to go on here. It's not in the record. We're sending it back. We want a hearing on this thing by the circuit court. And then when it came back to them in what's been called Roth 2, the second case, then they said, well, let's look at this. Now, no, they did talk about 7.502CM, but they didn't use that as a basis for the decision. They said, this is an example that the legislature wants to validate votes, and that they've setting standards here. Interpreted that they looked at all of the subsections under 7.502C or 2, and they found that very few of them make any mention of going back to talking about intent. There are specific instructions. You do this, you count it. You do this, you count it. For example, if there's a name written in, it is a vote for the candidate or for the person whose name is written in. It doesn't say you have to determine the intent of the voter. It's only when we get to 7.502C that they again mention this word intent. Now, why? And counsel for Roth has indicated he thinks this is surplus language if we don't respect it. I think that what they're trying to say there is that if your mark is outside of that box, because they're talking about two things. 7.502C says if it's in the box, one thing, but if it's outside the box in the name of the in the area of the name of the candidate, comma, indicating an intent to vote for that candidate, comma, then it shall be counted. I think that surplus goes away when you realize that trying to cover the basis of, well, if it's not in the box, but it's somewhere close, you may have to make a determination. There was discussion of the Schmidt case. There, the mark, as the Court of Appeals pointed out, was nothing like what we have enumerated in the statute. It's not similar in any way. It's a blacked-out obliteration. And that doesn't fit the standard set by the legislature.
The board, in its first determination, preceding Rock 1, right?
I'm sorry, the
board had a determination before Rock 1.
Yes.
And it determined that it could not determine the intent.
Right.
And therefore excluded the vote. The Court of Appeals, citing the DeBruce case, said, because the board is the trier of fact, its findings must be upheld if they are supported by substantial evidence. Okay.
Right.
So far, probably, there'd be no disagreement, assuming that, and with the agreement that intent is a finding of fact.
Right.
Then it sends it back for a determination regarding the intent of the voter. Why send it back when the board has already made that determination?
Well, that's a good question, because I think it depends upon whether that mark on this ballot, which they hadn't seen.
Well, the court here in Rock One doesn't give any indication what the standard for finding intent is. Erase, obliterate, in the box, out of the box, heavy pencil, light pencil. It doesn't say anything. It just says, you decided that you can't determine the intent. We're sending it back so you can determine the intent. How do you explain that opinion?
Well, the very question was presented of what to do with this ballot. It wasn't in the record before them. For one thing, I think they wanted some proceedings.
Well, there the court can say this ballot is not in the record. We can't determine if there's substantial evidence on the basis of this record. And from there you might have several things. It's up to the party who's relying on the ballot to have brought it, and you didn't bring it, you lose.
Well, we couldn't bring it in because they wouldn't let us intervene. They only let us intervene.
I understand. Okay. But, I mean, that's the way it might have gone, except for the intervention issue. Or you could say, we're not going to look at the ballot because we don't have any experience in looking at ballots. The Board of Canvassers may not be, as you say, experts. They may have very limited training. They may be political people and not neutral, disinterested decision makers like courts are, but they see a lot more ballots than we see, and a lot more questionable ballots than we see, and they determine intent as best they can, obviously, because they can't talk to the voter. They don't know who the voter is.
Right.
So they have to do it just on the paper.
But the legislature, which set up this scheme, which is consisting of all people who value this election process, and having been a candidate for public office myself, I feel very strongly about this, and all of you who sit here go through the election process. The legislature, I believe, it's very clear from the construction of that statute, gave specific instructions. If they do this, that indicates intent. You don't have discretion here, boards of canvas. We're not going to give you the ability to muck around in this process. Only when it goes away from these standards, when it's not within the box, it's not a mark like we've enumerated in the box, then we want to know, we need somebody out there to make some factual findings. When in DeBrow, the ballots turned up missing. Somebody has to decide that. That's not covered in the statute. When in Lagerquist, when there somebody brought up questions about eligibility of voters, now then somebody's got to make some decisions here. That's not in the standards. But when a voter makes a mark in the box to the right of, in this case, the word no, there's no discretion allowed. That the legislature has told the Board of Canvassers that is indicating the intent of the voters, and you shall count it.
So your position is, what is your position? Is it, what did the Court of Appeals say that you're upholding and that you want applied in future cases? What rule of law?
That those legislative pronouncements in 7.502 and particularly 2C are directives to the counters of ballots, and that when a voter follows those directives, that is, cast a ballot which falls within the prescribed directives of the legislature, that the boards of canvassers do not have discretion that they must count those votes. Now,
so the rule of law is you must count the vote.
Now, I didn't say that any mark, and this is what counsel for Roth has tried to say, well, that means any mark should be counted, even a fly speck or a copying mark. That's not what the statute says. It's any mark which is similar to those enumerated.
Made by a human being, obviously.
I would think
okay.
so. Okay. Yes.
Must count the vote if you can still see remnants of a mark in the box.
I believe so. And
that's the rule of law you want. If something is there,
I think you count it. Yes, I think
so. Even if it looks like it's been erased, but not totally successfully.
Well, I don't think this one looks erased, but even if it did, I think that you have to have some bright line rule that tells all these many people that count these ballots late at night on election night, do we count it or don't we? In the hearing on this matter, we had two poll workers testify, the village clerk who had gone through 10 years of elections and the poll worker who was working that day, and they both said, well, you know, there's a mark in the box, we count it. That's the standard we use. My client, Gail Muller, has worked as a poll worker. One of the reasons she brought this case was that she felt the Board of Canvassers was wrong to take a ballot with a mark in the box and cast it aside. She isn't really strongly against the referendum per se. She brought this because she believed that the Board of Canvassers erred as a matter of law, not that she would have put it that way.
Just what is the status of the referendum now? I assume the building has not been built. Has a new referendum been put to the voters?
Actually, a new referendum goes to the voters, and if I may stray from the record, and I ask
Well, it's a council, public record, I assume.
Yes. There's a new referendum for a lower amount of money that's proposed, and it will be voted on in November 3rd or 4th of this year. Some of the repairs that were proposed in that referendum, the replacement of the roof, a new boiler, have been done. Money was borrowed other ways. This referendum that's before the voters says, if you pass this, whatever happened in that 2000 election one doesn't matter. We won't spend that much money. So it may become a moot issue, but I don't think it is, because I think it is terribly important that you have this before you, because you have the opportunity to give the instructions to people who count ballots that no mischief is allowed. When it's in the box, you count it.
So the board is not authorized under the statutes to get into fact-finding or some sort of independent determination of voter intent unless the mark is unlike those that are specified in the statute. Is that your position?
Yes, I think that would be, if it falls outside of the legislative directives, out of the statutory directives, then certainly, and as I point out some examples, you know, ballots that were missing, challenges to people's credentials to vote, obliterations of marks or things that we just can't foresee, then we do. But if I, since that is certainly the other side, if I was to lose on the primary question, and this is a question of fact, then I think I would like to address that question. What happens then? Well, it has been Ross's position then that it's totally just a question of was there substantial evidence to support that decision? Well, the statute doesn't really say, well, first of all, the statute 9.50 allows a person to bring in evidence that wasn't known at the time of the Board of Canvassers count. In this case, no one knew that in the village of Lafarge there were problems, or at least reported problems, with the mechanical pencils used to mark the ballot. It was only the Monday after the Saturday night recount that this came to light. And so this evidence was presented to the circuit court that, you know, that people were complaining that the pencils were not, they were supposed to automatically advance the lead, and they were, you know, ever written with a mechanical pencil
the
that runs out of lead.
Did the court accept that evidence?
Pardon?
Did the trial court accept that evidence or exclude it?
Not for the truth of the matter asserted, that is, we don't know whether they really didn't do that or not, but for the fact that the election workers did get reports and thus were concerned about and substituted some pencils for the pencils that were being used, and that was discussed that night when that particular ballot was looked at. The poll worker said, yes, I remember that. The village clerk says, yes, I remember that, because we talked about the pencils, and that was probably, they said, we thought that was probably a result of the failure of the pencils.
But the rule that you want us to accept or you're advocating is if there's a mark in the box, that equals intent. And is that it? In other words, if there's a mark in the box under the statute 750. Which would be
2C, yes.
That is the intent.
Yes, I think that is the import of what the statute says. It starts out by saying under 7.502, ascertainment of intent. And then it goes on to say to determine intent, and then there's all these subsections. If you write in the if somebody writes in the name, it's a vote for that person. It's a definition of intent. It's the legislature's definition of intent. It's saying, and if you make a mark in the box, that's intent. Any other wording just says the legislature left this whole thing. One of the interpretations, and what Roth has said, is that, this is a two-step process. First, you decide, is there a mark? Then we decide intent. Well, I think that is impractical, but I don't think if you look at all the other subsections, there was nowhere where they gave the boards of canvassers that right to determine intent. If there's any surplus language, I think it has to do with it goes to the question of, well, if it's outside of the box, then what? Well, then you may have to determine intent here. If it's an X, well, that's pretty easy. If it's X's out the name or scratches out the name, then there's questions.
Yeah. It says to the square or any place within the space in which the name appears. So it could be there also. But anything outside of that, then the Board of Canvassers would have that ability to get into the intent of the voter. But if it's in the box, then they don't have that.
Right. A bright line rule. Okay. Makes it easy to count.
I want to follow up with that, because I am concerned about whether or not the phrase in 2C, that is indicating an intent to vote for the candidate, is rendered surplusage by your interpretation. To me, by your interpretation, you don't need that phrase whatsoever. You are saying, referring to 2C, if an elector marks a ballot within the square or the appropriate place, .. it is a vote for the candidate whose name it is opposite.
Correct.
That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
So what do you do with indicating an intent to vote for that candidate? Why do you need that?
Because they also added in there, probably trying to save subsections, or any place within the space in which the name appears, comma, indicating intent to vote for that candidate. I think that's a second indicating an intent to vote for that candidate is meant to modify or any place within the space in which the name appears. They didn't want to give that blanket thing that if it's in the space where the name appears, they said, well, you better look at that.
Well, I'm not trying to picture, but I can imagine that if it's outside of the space in which the name appears or outside of the box, but it could be close there too, or it could, that's the point at where the canvasser would have to make a decision on the intent of the voter. But as long as it's within the square, the mark, then that's it.
Yes, and I think we have to, though, note that they also had some other possible variations here, and that is, what is the mark? If it's an X or slash, which we have here, then you count it, and they gave some other enumerations. And so we know it's something similar, fine, but we can get way afield as what is that mark, too. Someone draws, I don't want to give you examples, but you can think of your own, of things that we might say, is they really trying to vote here, or are they just trying to deface the ballot, or something of that sort. I do want to make the point, though, that if that is a factual finding, and if it goes to the circuit court and someone brings in new evidence, what then? Are we only to rely upon the substantial evidence test of what wasn't even a hearing? It's a viewing by a board of canvassers, and that trumps new evidence. I had put into my brief some information, some documents from the Legislative Reference Bureau, that when the representative had this bill drafted that created the statute as we have it today under 9.50 that talks about the review, it's clear from those documents that they intended when there's new evidence that there should be a de novo review. And I certainly am not asking the court to find this as a factual finding, but if you should, or if in the future one of those cases comes to you, I think it's important to look at that statute and realize that it was created to, that if there's new evidence, then all bets are off. It's a de novo review by the circuit court. Boards of canvassers are not even like administrative agencies where the substantial evidence test was created. This is not a hearing. This is merely a count. These three people don't take evidence. At least in this case, there is three. They talk amongst themselves. They may invite audience comments, but they make a determination without a hearing. And there's no provision in the statute even for sending it back for further proceedings. So I think it's important that if it was a factual finding, that happens there. This is a very small part of the statutes, a very important part of the statutes, though. And we've focused pretty much all of our concern here with all these little subsections. If you read each of them, it's clear that the legislature is giving directives as to what to do when you're counting those ballots. If you see this, that's intent. If you see this, that's intent. They're setting up the scheme of specific rules designed to ensure uniform treatment of the voters and their votes.
In what election will, maybe this is not true, will all the machines be electronic rather than paper ballots? Is there a statute in Wisconsin on that?
I don't believe so. At this point, I'm not sure what the percentage of paper ballots are used. In Vernon County, for example, which is one of the more rural counties of Wisconsin, I believe only the city of Viroqua and possibly the city of Westby uses anything but paper ballots. They are very important to rural Wisconsin, and thus these directives of how they shall be counted. I mean, with machine ballots, you look at the number. You know, you have a printout, and there's nobody looking at those marks to say, oh, is there a mark? What's the intent of the voter? That two-step process just doesn't exist. And to suggest that it should exist for paper ballots is a scheme that is just absurd when you look at the rest of the statute. Therefore, I would ask that you uphold the Second Court of Appeals. I also want to make one other point about this law, the case that in the case cited by Roth, Univest Corporation versus General Split, this court made it very clear that law of the case doesn't apply here. When it comes here, the whole record's before you. It's what you think is the decision will be made here based upon the whole record. You're not bound by any so-called law of the case. But I don't believe there was any law of the case. I don't believe Roth 1 intended to make any law of the case. They certainly, in fact, they professed initially, we don't have this record before us. Here's a couple of things. Take a look at them. Get back to us when you've had a hearing if you want. So is this a question of law? Well, first of all, the interpretation of statutes is a question of law. And is it a factual finding, or was it a question of law as to whether this vote should be counted? I think the legislature made it clear that they are defining intent by the very directives they've set, and that if the voter obeys those directives, or at least acts within them, that the Board of Canvassers would have been arbitrary and capricious to do anything but follow those directives and, as a matter of law, count that ballot. I ask you to uphold the Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilbur. Mr. Blythe, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, just for the record, I want to register my strong objection to the continuing use of counsel of evidence explicitly excluded as hearsay by the trial court. The only new evidence that was received by the trial court was what I consider the irrelevant opinions of the clerk and and one or two other people said, well, yeah, I would have counted that ballot. And that's the only evidence that was accepted by the circuit court, and the rest was excluded as hearsay and should not and cannot be used. I guess second, Mr. Wilbur referred to this issue of the bright line rule. I think you have to consider where this would take us. If we say that any mark, even an apparent erasure, and let's just assume for the moment that it was even more clearly erased than what some of us might think in viewing the ballot. If you have a bright line rule, that's still counted, even though the clear intent of the voter is to erase that ballot. That's the rule that's being asked to be applied here today. And I think the problem is this whole issue gets colored when all of us start looking at the ballot and saying, what do you think, what do you think, what do I think? Should it be counted or not? Is that an erasure or not? That's why the legislature set it up the way it did. They said, we've got to have somebody to decide. That's the three-member board of canvassers. They decide what the voter's intent is. And like I say, I think that's a danger you get into with this bright line rule, that you may be ruling ballots in where the person intended not to vote, and that's the finding of the Board of Canvassers in this case. If the person, instead of erasing the vote in this case, had scratched over it, you say any mark must be counted, again, the person intended to remove that vote, but you're dictating that it must be counted because there's a mark there. As I said before, the only difference is the way they attempted to remove the mark. Instead of scratching over it, they erased it. And like I say, I think there's a real danger with this bright line, and I think the legislature realized that, and I think that's why they set the system up the way they did. There's been no suggestion that this process, despite counselors' comments about political appointees and potentials for mischief, There's been no indication that there's been abuse of this discretion by boards of canvassers over the last 50 years or 100 years in Wisconsin. Like I say, there's only been two cases that have come to this court regarding a questionable vote or question as to the intent of a voter. And I think we need to leave that discretion in the hands where the legislature put it, in the three-member board of canvassers.
Thank you, Mr. Blythe. I want to thank, on behalf of the court, Mr. Wilbur and Mr. Blythe for their arguments in a case we don't see very frequently here. And so we conclude 02-0542. The students shall remain here and be joined by other students. And we'll meet with Mr. Justice Prosser in just a few moments. And the court is in recess until 1:45.